The vaccine passport proposal that's been being brought forward, I think, is a fundamental challenge to people's liberty in Scotland.
That was Michael Mara, Labour MSP and party's education spokesman. We'll hear more from him later in the show. Hello and welcome to The Stooshie, the Scottish politics podcast from DC Thompson Media that helps you be better briefed. I'm Andy Phillip, the political editor at the Press and Journal, and on this episode, I'll be joined by political reporter Rachel Amery and investigations editor Callum Ross to examine and explain the last week in Scottish politics. But first, a summary of the week's biggest national and international politics stories, compiled and read by Morag Lindsay.
Support among Scots for independence is at 51%, according to a new poll. The Opinion for Sky News study goes against the grain for 2021, with support for separation previously dropping off following a spike last year. The poll found 51% would vote for independence when undecided voters were removed, but just 31% said there should be another referendum in the next 2 years. A Scottish Government minister has apologised following a fatal crash on the M9 that police failed to respond to for 3 days. Justice Secretary Keith Brown said he was deeply sorry to the families of two people who died in the 2015 accident, and Police Scotland has been fined £100,000 for failings which were found to have materially contributed to the death of one of the victims. Despite a call being made to report the crashed vehicle, officers did not arrive until 3 days later. John Yule, who was 28, was pronounced dead at the scene, and his partner Lamara Bell, who was 25, died 4 days later in hospital. Scotland has joined Wales in giving at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine to more than three quarters of its young adults. Some 75.1% of people aged 18 to 29 in Scotland are now estimated to have received their first jab. It comes as the Scottish Government plans for attendance at large events to require a vaccine passport from October the 1st. The scheme will make a QR code available through a smartphone app, which will be scanned before entry is allowed.
Thanks, Morag. But let's turn our attention to what's been happening closer to home. And we'll start actually by going back to our interview with Michael Mara, who's a North East Labour MSP and the party's education spokesman. He sat down with Derek Healy and they raked over the events of the past week, including the reaction from the opposition benches to the Scottish Government's programme for government, which Nicola Sturgeon set out in full to the Chamber. Derek started by asking newbie Michael Mara what it was like to be actually back in Parliament after the election in May.
I mean, I love being here. I love the business of, you know, kind of representing people, and yeah, it's been great for me in terms of the opportunity to do this job. It's the best job I can imagine, to tell the truth, representing the people of Dundee and the kind of broader northeast. It's just kind of what I've always wanted to do. So on a personal level, it's just a huge honour to be able to do that. I think it's been odd, though, in terms of not being able to kind of meet many people. In recent weeks, we've managed to get back out and we're doing some doorstep surgeries, kind of, you know, going to actually put leaflets, going and seeing people. That makes a bit of a difference, you know, hearing from the public more directly, face-to-face, talking through issues, which is the kind of, you know, the bread and butter of, you know, trying to be a representative. So that's helped. But and now that Parliament's back, there's a few more people around, you know, things are a bit busier than they were before the summer in terms of just the building. And that's really important just for getting the chance to meet the people that you're working with in a proper way. And everyone will find that in their own work and their own situation, you know, that kind of personal contact, whether you're a politician, a journalist, or whether you're working in, you know, in any kind of walk of life, you know, it's that personal contact with people that is what matters.
I know it's been a long-term ambition of yours to get there. So obviously congratulations again on that.
Thank you.
Have you had any of those sort of embarrassing new job moments yet? And are you prepared to admit to them on microphone?
Well, embarrassing new job moments. I don't know, Derek. I'm trying to think if I've got any kind of anecdotes.
I tell you, if none spring to mind, you've done well, because I would have had a few gaffes by now for sure. So,
yeah. I mean, I suppose there was There was an issue at First Minister's Questions last week where I asked a question about the First Minister essentially sacking Stephen House. There was a story that was covered in the Courier, and the rules had been adjusted actually from before the summer back to pre-COVID rules. And I know that like kind of at least four of my colleagues had done exactly the same things. When you press your button, you know, and so I'd pressed my button essentially at the wrong time. And so, yeah, so that kind of thing can be a bit embarrassing when you're learning the ropes and, you know, there is that kind of the formality of it. There's lots of bits and pieces to learn. So, yeah, that, I suppose, was probably the most embarrassing thing so far. But, yeah, I'll get used to it. I'll learn the rules eventually, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, I think learning the ropes, what can you do?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest developments we've had since Parliament came back has been the programme for government that we saw announced this week. I want to ask you a little bit about that. It kind of sets out the government's agenda over the next year, and it's been, I think, broadly welcomed by charities and organisations. In fact, the SNP actually sent out a press release of all the organisations it said had backed its programme. I think it's fair to say you were less impressed. I saw you refer to it as a dreary affair and describe Nicola Sturgeon's kind of demeanour when she was making a statement to Parliament as almost as if she was reading out a bus timetable. Talk me through your thoughts on what we heard.
I mean, it's just, to me, Derek, it's spreadsheet politics. You know, this is, where are the organisations that we need to talk to that we can tick the box, put a little bit of money against that name, and, you know, hopefully get, as you say, their endorsement on the other side. Now, that's nothing against the organisation or the cause whose, you know, responsibility is to do that work. But actually, in terms of your intent for the country and what you need to try and achieve, I think there's no recognition of the scale of the problem that we face as a country. You know, the government are acting like, you know, we're out of the woods, but COVID cases are the highest they've ever been. You know, they've got no obvious solution to any of these. You know, track and trace system, you know, kind of, or test and protect, as it's called, falling apart, really, not performing at anything like the level it should be. And I think anyone who's got kids in school would recognise that. You know, it's basically been abandoned in schools. So there's the COVID situation. I've got huge problems in terms of the strategy they're taking on that. I don't think there's any recognition of the challenge in our schools where kids have missed, you know, up to 2 years of education, particularly kids from the most vulnerable backgrounds. We've got an economic crisis, you know, whether that be, we want to look at just the number of people who are still on furlough coming out the other side of that, what we're going to do to support them to have jobs and decent wages in a economy that's stagnating. We've got an NHS, you know, with a huge waiting list. The waiting lists are unprecedented levels. And we know that the remobilisation of that is incredibly difficult and a long-term challenge. And we know that people will lose their lives as a result of that. I don't think all those things pieced together, none of that is a kind of great surprise. We all know that this is a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime, beyond that, once-in-four-lifetimes event that we've gone through and we're going through. But actually, you would need something in terms of the leadership, the impetus, the vision to try and sort that out. I mean, really, what we heard the other day, I mean, it was just woeful. It was so below the kind of the idea of the intent and the energy and the focus and the leadership required to get the country into a better place. Part of me wonders whether the First Minister actually believes that she can make the country better. I mean, that's how depressed I was with it. I mean, the only thing that was more depressing than that was Douglas Ross's response to it, which was, you know, like he was you know, correcting the mistakes in the bus timetable and patronising her for reading it out. I mean, but that exchange and the bickering between them left me wanting to weep.
I mean, I know we had, so obviously, last year with the COVID pandemic really taking its toll on Parliament business, we had 4 bills planned. This year we saw that go back up to 12, which is around the kind of thing we'd expect to see in a normal year. The Scottish Government said its main aim is just to lead Scotland safely out of the pandemic, confront climate change, having a green, fair economic recovery, and boosting opportunities for children and young people. All of those, I know, are issues that are close to your heart as well. But your leader claims Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP have run out of ideas, and it sounds as if you would kind of share that view. What would you have liked to have seen included that wasn't?
So I think we could have seen immediate action on child poverty.
What would that have looked like?
So we'd have immediately doubling the Scottish Child Payment and looking to overall quadruple it within the next year. And we look at the levels of child poverty which are increasing in Scotland. To me, it's a moral affront, and there's been a clear call from across all parts of society to deal with that. Now, the reality is the Scottish Government have got more money in this year than they will have again for, I think, many years to come. If they can't do that now, when on earth are they going to do it? You know, and to me, I think in the end, we will manage to push them to do it. I believe that. I believe we can get that done. But every day that goes past without that immediate action, kids are waking up in poverty in this country that could be dealt with now. I think it's unacceptable. So that would be the first and foremost thing that I would believe has to happen. Mm-hmm. And it gets me really angry that the dithering and the delay on this stuff, almost kind of waiting for the next press release, it feels like me at times. Action should be taken now on that. I think that in my own portfolio, I do lead on education for Labour. We know that there's reforms that are going to have to happen in education that have been promised, but there's no clarity in terms of when that will happen. They will require legislation to merge, but we should have seen a bill on that, a promised bill within this year, because essentially we've had a kind of a cohort of kids, a couple of years of kids who've been hugely let down by and impacted by the pandemic. And now what we're saying is, we know that reform is necessary, but we're going to wait for another cohort of kids to go past before we even put that reform in place. We had to do it right, but there needs urgency, you know? So those kind of things, I think, could have been a much bigger part of the programme for government. But it takes that kind of will to do difficult things and show leadership. Mm. And that kind of spreadsheet approach to politics, again, ticking off interest groups, asks here and there, to me, it's just not going to cut it.
I wanted to ask you about the independence aspect of it. There's been a lot of criticism there, including from Labour, about what's been described as a sort of focus on having another referendum.
Well, I think there's essentially what the focus on is SNP conference this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we've got a programme for government announcing that they're restarting the work on a new white paper, new prospectus for independence. We were told that the focus of this wouldn't happen until after the recovery. I was speaking to civil servants last week who are utterly aghast at this vaccine passport proposal, because they know that no work has been done on it. Just in the last half hour, they've published the paper, 5 pages of scant information on what this proposal is going to look like, with huge holes in it. I mean, no work has been done on that, and the civil service couldn't believe it was being brought forward to Parliament, right? Because they're an organisation just like so many that are on their knees, exhausted. No staff, not enough staff, because the people are self-isolating at home because they're dealing with the situation that's around them. And they have to focus on that day job of getting track and trace and working so that we can get out the other side of the pandemic. Instead, we're getting, another scheme on the vaccine passports. And now we're told that actually civil servants are going to go away and start working on this white paper. I mean, really what that is about placating the SNP membership, rather than thinking about what the country want. There is no appetite in the country for a referendum. I understand there's people who want one in the long term, but in the short term, all the parties were clear. Have to wait until after we're at the other side of this. To me, it's a dereliction of duty.
I think, to be fair to Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP, I think they would make the claim that they're talking about 2023 if the pandemic allows. Obviously the last election was in May. It wasn't last year or the year before. And the SNP were voted back into government on the promise of holding another referendum when the pandemic allows. I don't think there's been a massive shift in their position on that. I'm sure they would argue that the agreement with the Greens gives them an even broader pro-independence mandate now. So isn't this just them fulfilling that election promise in exactly the same way Labour would presumably seek to do?
What they said is, Derek, when we come out the other side of the recovery, when Scotland has recovered, then we would see the independence referendum that they have their mandate to pursue, and they would make the case for it then. You know, the reality is, we've already touched on, cases are at a level that were previously unseen. The huge problems in our education system and in our economy, if we don't deal with those, we're not even starting the recovery, let alone getting out the other side of it. So you genuinely believe that the scale of these various and intersecting crises that we've got in this country that have to be dealt with, that should be the focus of government. You know, I just, all energy put towards that in order to do that job for the people of Scotland. That's first and foremost what this government was elected to do. And I understand that they stood and they said that they would have a referendum and they would pursue it. And I know that they will, but they said it would be after the Scotland had recovered. And, you know, frankly, I don't think we are going to recover by 2023. And we have to focus on that.
I mean, talk me through why vaccine passports aren't the answer then. I mean, I know that this is something you say should be looked at quite carefully, and the kind of focus should be on, if this is going to be done, it should be done properly. But I know that Labour is against vaccine passports. Is that a view you would share?
The vaccine passport proposal that's been brought forward, I think, is a fundamental challenge to people's liberty in Scotland. But that is a balance that we've been prepared to strike throughout the pandemic for remedies that work. So lockdown is a similar issue to that. You know, when something has to happen to protect people's lives, we're prepared to make those compromises. But there's nothing to be said in any of the information available that this is actually going to have the kind of effect that the SNP seem to be claiming for it. I have real concerns about how much work has been done to prepare the scheme. And as far as we've seen today, that is very little. But it's also, I think, the effect of this and the academic work that's out there so far is that what it will do is it might speed up a few people who were already going to get the vaccine to get them, but it will harden attitudes amongst those who are refusing to get the vaccine. Now, the reality is in Scotland that we are now have a one-track solution to the pandemic. We are pursuing vaccines and nothing else. We've effectively, in many areas, given up on test and protect. The Scottish government's given up on it. We have there is nothing being done to, as far as I can tell, to improve ventilation in our public buildings in any kind of considered way. So what we're doing is we're relying entirely on the vaccine. As a result of that, the number of people you get vaccinated has to be incredibly high. Has to be really high, particularly with the Delta variant. Now, actually, we can't afford to alienate more people from getting the vaccine. And we have to meet those people where they are. We have to be able to persuade them to get that done. And actually, this kind of approach, I think, is the evidence that we've seen so far is that it could harden attitudes against getting the vaccine for many people. So I think there would be a short-term increase in people who are going to get it anyway, who just thought, right, God, well, I better go and get it now. But actually, it will make the bigger job of getting out of the pandemic harder in the long run. So that, I think, is the kind of the practical challenge. There's also a philosophical challenge in this in terms of protecting people's liberty. You know, so this is a huge outreach in terms of the role of the state and the control in people's lives that we have. It's potentially open to discrimination, particularly to the poor and ethnic minorities, people who have been less likely to get the vaccine so far, and excluding them from public space. So that has to be done, as the Human Rights Commission said yesterday, on the basis of proportionality. And that is it a proportionate response? And part of that is, have you exhausted the other means of dealing with the situation? And it's pretty clear to me that the Scottish Government have not exhausted those other means, because they are allowing a test and protect system to fall over. That, to me, says that this is not the solution for now.
I think it's going to be something we're going to be talking about an awful lot going forward.
And rightly so, Derek. I mean, I think it's a debate that has to be had, but it's one that has to be done, I think, in a responsible and a reasonable way. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Scottish Government have to be open to these challenges, and they have to do it properly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all we have time for today. So, Michael Mara, I'll just thank you for joining me. Thanks for taking part.
Ah, pleasure. Thanks, Derek.
There was plenty to go on there. Real food for thought from Labour MSP Michael Mara, who is the party's education spokesman and representative across the North East. He talked about programme for government and, of course, a slightly more recent development, which was the Parliament backing in a vote the COVID passport. The opposition were not happy with the scheme at all, and Michael Mara was scathing. Rachel, you've been paying attention to the developments in Scotland's new COVID passport. I wonder if you could just sort of talk us through a bit more of the mechanics of what happened yesterday in Parliament.
Well, ultimately, they agreed that we're going to be getting them. So on the 1st of October, we'll all need to prove that we've had two jabs before we can enter places like nightclubs and large events over 10,000 people. And there was a lot of opposition to it in the chamber. The Conservatives, Labour and Lib Dems, they all voted against this. Douglas Ross and the Conservatives said there was not enough detail in the proposals, and that is why they voted against it. You heard Michael Mara there saying why Labour was against it. His party leader, Anna Sauer, basically said the same thing in Parliament, that we should be focusing on things such as test and protect instead. And the Liberal Democrats, right from the very beginning, they've said they're going to oppose this. So it was no surprise when they did vote against it yesterday. And they said that under no circumstance should there be that someone has to tell a bouncer their medical history to get into a nightclub. And there's been a backlash in the public as well. If you look on social media to see people's reaction to the news, many aren't happy about it. And a lot have been saying, even though they do have two jabs and are fully vaccinated, they're still not happy with having to prove that with a vaccine passport. Many have raised concerns that perhaps nightclubs will shut down because they've already had a really tough time. You'll remember there's some of the venues that have been shut for the longest during this pandemic. And I've also seen people as well asking, where can they buy fake passports? How do they get around the rules? Already people are asking that on social media.
Yeah, lots of memories of being 16 or 17 and looking for a proof to get into a nightclub. Now, before we get on to sort of more on that practical part of it, the politics is interesting. Douglas Ross, you mentioned there, he's an MSP. He's also an MP.
Mm-hmm.
Boris Johnson's Conservative Party in government in the UK may well also back a COVID passport. So Douglas Ross, he's going to assent to that because it's Boris Johnson's and oppose the one in Scotland because it's Nicola Sturgeon's? It's hard to know that it's a similar scheme with Labour. Are they going to be saying one thing here and one thing south of the border?
There has been a lot of suggestion that perhaps Douglas Ross will have two different answers, one for England and one for Scotland. There has been a lot of suggestion of that. So that is one thing that we'll have to wait and see, because if it is the case they say no in Scotland and yes in Westminster, then yes, it does very much just look like they are towing party lines and going with what they're told to go with, doesn't it?
It does. And then, I mean, you've got the sort of get out clause where maybe he's thinking, well, it's just that the version under the Scottish government's just paper thin and not being thought through, whereas the UK government's one is fantastic. I mean, that's going to be the argument that he'll have to address later on, I suppose. But like you said, there are real life implications which we will all notice quite quickly. Our colleague Del Merson was looking at this yesterday. A very interesting line coming out of Aberdeen Football Club. They fear that telling people that they will have to prove their status to get in is going to lead to about £1.5 million loss as people try and get their money back. Can you talk us through a little bit more on what the implications are and what businesses, nightclubs are saying about it?
Yes, so there's a lot of football clubs in Scotland that have that higher fan base may be quite severely impacted by this. The Aberdeen in particular are saying that they are going to be severely challenged financially by it, and it was brought up in Holyrood about that too, because they just fear that so many people will not come to games now. So that's potentially a big area that's going to be affected by this. And there have been people saying as well that perhaps it will stop people going to nightclubs, and it will see nightclubs and other late night entertainment venues shutting down over the next few years because of this. Maybe not even years, it could be months, who knows. I know for myself, last night I was actually at a gig myself in Glasgow, and I've read today that there was 50,000 people at that gig. So that is something that if it was next month, we would all have had to have shown we'd had two jabs to get through the door. As it was yesterday, we had to show a negative lateral flow test, and you have to trust people there that they were telling the truth, and that people who didn't have COVID people didn't have COVID when they came through the gate there yesterday. So perhaps maybe last night at that gig, would I have felt safer knowing everybody had been double jabbed? Maybe perhaps I would have, because like I said, there was thousands and thousands there last night. So perhaps you would feel a bit safer knowing that there's that extra level of protection amongst the people you're standing next to.
Presumably it's also an idea to try and encourage people to take up the vaccination as well, to increase coverage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the S&P have been quite open about that, saying that they're very much hoping that this will encourage those people who haven't yet gone for their vaccine to get one. You heard Labour saying that they don't think it will. They think it'll speed up those who were already thinking about it, but those who are already very much opposed to getting the vaccine are not going to change their minds because of this. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see how that does affect the numbers. But the SNP very much say it's going to help reduce the spread of the virus. It's going to help venues from having to shut down again in the future. And yes, they think it will increase the number of people going to get their vaccine. And the Greens did back them as well on this. And that might be a bit of a U-turn, because previously their co-leader Patrick Harvey had said he worried it would increase inequalities with some people being able to go to football matches, for example, and their friends not being able to because of their vaccine status. But in the end, they did end up backing the SNP on this.
And they avoided a bit of an embarrassment because their backbenchers also fell in line. Not so there wasn't an obvious clash between the two Green MSPs who are now in government. The debate shifted quite a lot as well recently, hasn't it? Because at the start of the year, there was huge, expensive pilot projects run by very clever people who were trying to set up how a festival might work. You know, everyone had to have negative tests and prove their actual negative status before they went in. And that seems to have been completely overtaken. So it's all about, you know, being vaccinated against the virus rather than proving that you don't have it in the first place to go into a place. It's fascinating how things have kind of switched a little bit there. Callum, you've been following events in Parliament as well. You were listening to that interview with Michael Mara. Did you feel like weeping when you heard the programme for government?
It was a really interesting interview, wasn't it, Derek did with Michael Mara there. He's I think, been one of the more impressive of the newbies, as you described them, since he came into Holyrood. I suppose that's reflected in the fact he's been given such an important brief by Anna Sarwar in terms of education. Obviously, he'll be well known to people in Dundee as a councillor already. Yeah, some good sound bites there. He's obviously good for a sound bite. Made him weep, and spreadsheet politics was said a few times. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but quite interesting. I mean, he made some legitimate points. Obviously, I think there could have been more bills. There could have been more action on things like child poverty, but it's a difficult one because, you know, the opposition parties criticised the government for not being fully focused on the pandemic, and you know, we heard from Michael Mara there that they weren't recognising the scale of the problem and being distracted by the independence referendum, but then also criticised them for not proposing more things that they should be focused on. I mean, my hunch would be those kind of comments around the child poverty would actually hurt Nicola Sturgeon. And I think another thing that probably she's quite sensitive about is that idea that you hear sometimes that her government's not been very radical. But obviously the government's got to spend so much time focused on the pandemic. I think what the government's probably thinking is, let's focus on a couple of big ticket items that they might be able to make some progress on, such as, you know, the creation of a national care service, which is a huge undertaking, obviously, as well as things like, you know, wraparound childcare support, which we got a bit more detail on in terms of the programme for government. But you know, we have to wait and see how far they get with these things and what impact they'll have.
Yeah, it strikes me that Nicola Sturgeon is maybe with the national care service looking for a bit more of a sort of a legacy thing, because it's hard to, when you look back at Alex Salmond, for example, you could maybe point to some legacy things. I mean, he nearly took the country to independence. There's a massive new bridge across the Firth of Forth, things like that. But what has Nicola Sturgeon so far got to show, apart from pointing to, at the moment, her record in leadership in the COVID pandemic? I mean, is that, we don't actually know how that's going to come out the other end yet. So What is that the thinking here? Do you think the National Care Service will give something very, very clear?
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Andy, and especially as, you know, it doesn't feel like we're very close to another independence referendum, and you know, whether she is going to be the person that, that leads Scotland to independence, the SNP leader that does that. I mean, that there's got to be a big question mark up in the air about that. So I think, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think she'll hope that her leadership during the pandemic will be remembered as a positive legacy by people. And of course, you know, people without much interest in politics in the past have, you know, seen Nicola Sturgeon, you know, on our TVs almost every day last year, and will have had a view, I'm sure, on how she's handled the pandemic. And yeah, the National Care Service, if they can get anywhere close to establishing that up, I mean, it's hugely complicated and expensive business. But you know, I think you're right. I think she will see that as some kind of legacy she might be able to leave behind.
Which is, you know, you've also been looking ahead a little bit from the events in Parliament to what's going on as we speak, which is the start of the SNP party conference, which again is being held virtually all online, which is not as, it doesn't have quite the same impact as a real life conference where there's lots of delegates milling about. There's lots of opportunities for little problems in the side for the fringe meetings. It's harder to cover these things and to see the standouts, but I got the impression that maybe her programme for government focusing so quickly on independence was a nod to the party faithful this weekend as well. I mean, we've all seen what happened with splits in the SNP on whether or not they are going fast enough or too slow on independence. Alex Salmond is having his very own conference this weekend in a town hall in Greenock. They think the Scottish government, that the SNP are too slow and that the Greens are a break on independence. You know, everyone else in Parliament thinks that Nicola Sturgeon is going too fast. So, you know, somewhere in the middle, what's happening this weekend? And do you think that the SNP supporters are on board or getting frustrated?
Yeah, I mean, you never really hear the SNP leadership speaking so openly about their ambitions for independence until it comes around to conference season and they're speaking to their own members. Obviously, it's no secret, but that is when they feel most comfortable talking about it, I think, when they know they've got a very receptive audience and they want to kind of rally those troops, especially with council elections around the corner. I mean, I think on paper, speaking generally, Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP go into this conference in a pretty relaxed position politically. Obviously, I'm not suggesting they're relaxed about the pandemic, but compared to other conferences, you know, there aren't huge political issues and pressures that need to be resolved immediately. You know, we've touched on some of these issues already, but they've got through the first year of the pandemic and would hope that the worst of, as we all do, that the worst of that is going to be behind us soon. The First Minister survived the inquiries into the handling of allegations against Alex Salmond, which we sometimes, you know, forget, you know, only a few months ago could have cost her job. And you know, you mentioned Mr. Salmond, it will have been a huge relief for Ms Sturgeon that he failed in his bid to get back into Holyrood at May's election.
Quite spectacularly.
Yeah, and also, you know, along with that, many of Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP leadership's harshest critics within the party have left to join Mr Salmond and Alapa, which removes another problem for us. Yeah. So, and then there's the election itself, of course, which the SNP didn't do too badly in, although it failed to get the overall majority. So, I mean, all things considered, I think it could be a lot worse than it currently is. But, I mean, that being said, there are looming problems. Right now, it's hard to see. I think I said a minute ago, you know, it's hard to see where this independence referendum, how it's going to be delivered anytime soon within the kind of timetable they've set out, with the Conservatives just flatly refusing to hand Holyrood the powers and not really under any major pressure to budge on that.
Polls are looking quite good, though, are they not? The recent polls yesterday, today, 51% or so.
And I think that's the only thing that might make movement happen. It's probably what Nicola Sturgeon's hoping for, is if the UK government start to see evidence that they are, you know, refusal to engage in discussions about a second independence referendum is actually pushing up support for independence. That's how things might move. I think that will certainly be Nicola Sturgeon's hope. You know, there are other issues. The whole gender recognition thing isn't going away anytime soon. We've got future of North Sea oil and gas. I mean, that's not very clear what exactly the SNP's position is and what divisions there are under the surface. And then there's, you know, Nicola Sturgeon herself. How long is she going to continue? You mentioned her legacy before. Who's going to replace her when she does depart? So I think all these things will be worth keeping an eye on over the next few days at the conference, but it might be kind of, you know, early stages for bigger issues that might kind of blow up next year or the year after that.
Well, hopefully, Nicola Sturgeon will have all those problems sorted out by the end of the week, and we'll know exactly where we all stand and whether there'll be a referendum or not. We can all get back to our lives. Anyway, that's been a fascinating little trot through the week's events and the programme for government and everything in and around it. So while we all get our COVID passports and start planning our nightclubs for the weekend, let's say thanks to political reporter Rachel Emery and investigations editor Callum Ross and, of course, producer Chris Finn. And you for listening. We'll be back next week with more. Until then, and even after then, pick up or log on to The Courier, The Press and Journal and all our news brands so that you can be better briefed. Cheerio.
The Stooshy is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you can be better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph, Evening Express and The Sunday Post work hard day and night, online, in print and beyond, to bring you careful reporting and analysis designed to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, in Westminster and in our communities. So you don't miss an episode, follow The Stooshy today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know folk like you who want to understand politics in Scotland a little better, suggest they tune into The Stooshy or follow Stooshy Scott on Twitter and Facebook. You can get a free month of unlimited access to The Courier or The Press and Journal too. Just go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe or pressandjournal.co.uk/subscribe or follow the links in the episode notes to be better briefed. Check the episode notes for details and terms.